Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan, and today, two fan favorites. We're starting off with yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This one's called The Big Scoop Matter from 1956. And then we'll hear about Jack Benny going to college with Gracie on Burns and Allen. That's coming up in 30 minutes. Right now, yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Joe McNabb, Northeast Indemnity, Johnny.
Oh, hi, Joe. What's up?
At the moment, my blood pressure.
Too much work?
No. Prospect of having to pay off on a $100,000 life insurance policy.
Uh-oh.
Fella, I think you know, Johnny. Art Wesley.
Oh, sure. Been a pal of mine for years. Reporter.
Yeah. Apparently, he's working on a story right now that somebody doesn't want him to report.
What do you mean?
Night before last, he got beat up in an alley. Yesterday, a car made a pass at him at high speed.
What about today?
It's early yet, Johnny.
Oh, yeah, sure. But let's hope it's not too late.
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Home Office Northeast Indemnity Affiliates, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Big Scoop matter. Expense account item one, $18.40, transportation and incidentals to New York City. I called Art Wesley's paper. He wasn't in and nobody seemed to know where he was. Then I remembered a small bar called Tony's over on 3rd Avenue. I took a cab, that's item two, $1.25, and found him in a corner booth.
Sorry, Johnny, no bodyguard. The informants I'm working with will take off fast if they spotted one. No informants, no story.
That insurance policy your paper took out on you, who's the beneficiary?
A dear departed wife, Joan.
Departed? I thought...
We split up a couple of months ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Art.
Yeah, we were living in two different worlds. I wanted a home and family. She wanted a trip to the moon every night.
Where is she now?
Who knows? On her way to the moon, I guess.
Hey, look. This story you're working on, Art.
It's hot, Johnny. And big, real big. A national gambling syndicate. And run by a guy right here in New York.
Who?
I'm getting close, but I'm not sure yet. When I am, then out come my articles.
What's this guy gonna do when you push him into a corner? Look, I'm worried about you.
You look, Johnny, I'm not as foolish as you think. I've got his name written down and put in a safe deposit box with what evidence I got. That's my real insurance.
Oh, all right, look, we've been friends a long time. I'm not gonna let you do this alone.
Sorry, Johnny. I gotta go it alone.
Since I'd gotten nowhere with Art, I decided to try his wife, Joan, even though they were separated. I found her in an apartment on East 68th, but she was hardly what you'd call cooperative.
Look, Mr. Dollar, so you're a friend of Art's. At the moment, I'm not.
Mrs. Wesley, your marriage with Art is none of my business. But that insurance policy his paper took out on him is. And incidentally, you're still the beneficiary.
So?
So he could be in danger, those articles he's writing.
Why doesn't he drop it?
Oh, look, you know Art better than that.
Then what am I supposed to do about it? That story is his business. How I feel about things is my business. And come to think of it, I can't see that either of those things is your business.
Item three, $1.80, cab fare to police headquarters in the office of my old friend, Detective Lieutenant Rastelli.
Sure, sure, I know about those attempts on Art's life. So I talked to him and got nowhere.
He told me the stories about a national gambling syndicate.
It's more than he told me.
Supposedly the big boss is here in New York. Now, what are you going to do about it?
Look, the minute Art quits thinking he's got to hit the jackpot all by himself and lets us in on it, we'll give him all the protection he... Lieutenant Rastelli. Yeah, just a minute. It's for you, Johnny.
Oh, thanks. Hello?
Art Wesley, Johnny. They told me at your hotel where to reach you.
Anything new, Art?
I'm leaving town for a few hours. This could be it, Johnny. Tonight could be the jackpot.
Well, listen, let me go with you.
Sorry, I gotta go alone. It's part of the deal.
Art, it could be a trap.
I can take care of myself. Call you when I get back. Wish me luck.
Well, wait. Art! Art! Item 4, $1.80 cab to Art's apartment, where I persuaded the manager to let me in. I was looking for anything that would give me a lead. Then, near the phone on a scratch pad, I found where he'd written the word Watika several times. Sure, Lake Watika, upstate. Art had a lodge there. Item 5, $25 even for a rented car. It was a 3-hour drive to Lake Watika, which was bad enough. But to top it off, it started to rain, and rain hard. When I finally got to the highway turnoff, the side road to the lake was a mass of mud. Then I got two quick breaks. It stopped raining, and I spotted the 6-mile road into Art's place. Half an hour further on, I saw a light. Art's car was parked at one side, and the front door of the lodge was wide open. When I got to it, I saw why. Art was lying in the doorway. Yeah, he was the one who wanted to hit the jackpot. But you can't hit the jackpot with a slug, particularly when that slug is right between your eyes. I drove to the sheriff's office and reported it. Sheriff Tompkins and his boys took over. But in the darkness and the mud, they could only make a routine check. He asked me to meet him at the lodge the next morning, so I did.
Buddy was right here in the doorway, huh, son?
Yeah, Sheriff, I didn't move it.
And Wesley probably got shot when he answered the door by somebody standing out there on the ground.
Because of that bullet hole in the roof?
Yeah. Right over that shelf that's stocked with canned goods, sugar, salt, and the like. Apparently, he used this place regular.
Yeah, he used to do some of his writing here. Were you able to determine time of death?
Coroner says between 10:30 and 11 last night. What time did you arrive?
About half an hour after the rain stopped. I'd say 11:45.
Means it was still raining a good half hour after the killing. Yeah, no wonder we found no tracks.
Hey, look, Sheriff. Art was working on a hot story about a national gambling syndicate. Could be that he found out who the boss was last night, the hard way.
Oh? Then you think the killer was from out of town? Maybe New York?
Yeah. Yeah, now where would he stay? Is there a hotel around here?
Lake Watika Inn, just outside the village, about 6 miles from here.
Sheriff, I'll check it out.
The guests here at the inn, Mr. Dollar? Well, we have only two who checked in yesterday. It's the off-season, of course.
Yeah, clerk, who are they?
Well, Mr. Cooper yesterday afternoon and a Mr. Buckley around dark.
Uh-huh, they still here?
Mr. Cooper is sitting right out there on the terrace, but... Mr. Buckley paid in advance and left quite early this morning.
I see. Did Buckley give any reason for stopping here?
He said he was a traveling man and didn't like to drive in the rain.
Okay. I'd like you to write down a description of him. I'll pick it up on the way out.
Oh, I'll be glad to, sir.
Hi.
Oh, good morning.
Enjoying the scenery?
Yes, immensely. Oh, sit down, won't you?
Sure, thanks. My name's Dollar.
Mine's Cooper. You just check in?
I'll just drop by.
I came yesterday.
Uh-huh. Pretty up here this time of year.
Yes. Yes, certainly is. I really enjoy places like this in the off-season. It's a nice change.
Too bad the weather hasn't been better, huh?
Well, the rainstorm last night? Oh, I enjoyed that, too.
You were out in it?
Oh, no. No, I enjoyed it the way a storm should be enjoyed. In front of the fireplace in my cottage with a drink and a good book. No, Mr. Dollar, I stayed in last night.
And that was that. I picked up the description of the other guest, Buckley, from the clerk and gave it to Sheriff Tompkins, who got out a bullet in him. Then I drove back to New York City, turned in my rented car and took a cab, that's item 6, $1.70, to Joan Wesley's apartment.
Yes. They notified me this morning about Art's death. I don't know what to say. What is there to say?
Good question, Mrs. Wesley.
If only he hadn't been so stubborn. If only he'd given up that story about the gambling syndicate or whatever it was.
Yeah. You figure somebody in the syndicate killed him?
Why, of course.
Mrs. Wesley, did you know Art had gone on up to the lodge at Lake Watika?
No. Mr. Dollar, I'm rather tired.
One more thing. Did you go out last night?
No. It was raining. I stayed here in the apartment.
All evening?
All evening.
I see. Well, thanks, Mrs. Wesley. Maybe I was imagining, but it seemed to me Joan Wesley hesitated just a little before telling me she hadn't been out of her apartment last night. And if she had gone to Lake Watika, I checked the basement garage. Her car was clean. Too clean. Item 7, $5 to the garage attendant for some very interesting information. Joan Wesley had ordered her car washed first thing this morning. Why? Because the wheels were covered with mud from last night.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. Better schools mean better citizens, better neighbors, better families. But we can't expect our children to respond, to learn and grow, if we ourselves are indifferent to their school environment. CBS Radio urges that you write to Better Schools, 9 East 40th Street, New York 16, New York, for information about how citizens can spark community action to improve their schools. That address again is Better Schools, 9 East 40th Street, New York 16, New York. Now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the Big Scoop Matter.
I tell you, I didn't leave this apartment last night.
Your car says differently, Joan.
Car.
You had it washed today because it was all muddy. And the reason it was muddy was because you had it out in the rain last night.
Look,
another thing. You told me you didn't know Art had gone to the lodge. You hadn't heard from him. But the switchboard operator told me you had a call from him yesterday. Now, why else would he call you except to tell you where he was going? Well, how about it, Joan?
All right. Art did call me yesterday and told me he was going to Lake Watika.
And how about last night?
Yes. I went out, but not to Lake Watika.
Art wouldn't give you a divorce. By killing him, you get your freedom and $100,000.
I didn't kill Art. I didn't go up there last night.
And where did you go?
Might as well know. The reason I wanted a divorce from Art was because I'd found someone else.
Oh?
That's where I went for a few minutes last evening.
Why did you lie about the phone call from Art yesterday?
I don't know. I was confused. I was afraid it would look bad for me if it came out that I knew Art had gone up there.
It doesn't look good for you this way, believe me.
Oh, Johnny, I'm telling the truth.
Who is this fella you're interested in?
I don't see why he
Who is he?
His name is Ted Nash. Will you have to talk to him?
I sure will, and right now. But I was wrong about talking to Ted Nash right now. I called his apartment and got no answer. Item 9, $1.60, cab fare to police headquarters in the office of Detective Lieutenant Rastelli.
You figure this guy Nash and Joan Wesley could have killed Art and used a gambling syndicate threat as a cover, huh?
It's a possibility, Lieutenant.
Well, I'll see what I can find out about Nash. How'd you do at Lake Watika?
Two guests checked in the day of the killing. One, a man named Buckley. He left early this morning. Sheriff Tompkins has a bulletin out on him.
Who else?
A fellow named Cooper, who apparently likes to go places in the off-season. Nothing to tie him in particularly.
Cooper, huh? We had a rumble some time ago that a guy named Cooper was involved in that gambling syndicate.
What?
Trouble is, we got no proof.
Hey, wait a minute.
What's the matter?
Art told me he'd put the name of the man he was after in a safe deposit box. If we could find the key to that box.
How about Art's apartment?
Let's take a look. So we looked, and we found the key tucked away in a desk, but only a number on it. Nothing to tell where it was located. I gave it to Lieutenant Rastelli, and he promised to check every bank in town if necessary. Well, I went on back to Lake Watika to see if the man named Cooper at the inn was the same one Rastelli told me about. When I got there, after a frantic 3-hour drive, I found him comfortably sitting by the fireplace.
Well, Mr. Dollar, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Cooper, I want to get right to the point. You told me you came up here to enjoy the scenery.
Yes, that's fine.
Why? The man who was killed last night, Art Wesley, he was trying to expose a national gambling syndicate.
Oh, that's very interesting. So?
So, I know a police detective in New York who thinks you're a member of that syndicate.
Well, now, Mr. Dollar, that's a very serious charge. I presume you have proof. Well? No proof. Well, in that case, I don't think there's any...
Mr. Dollar, long-distance call for you. You can take it on that phone right beside you.
Thanks, clerk. Johnny Dollar.
Rastelli in New York, Johnny.
Hi, Lieutenant. You locate that...
Yeah, the safe deposit box. And in it, we found the name of the man Art Wesley was closing in on. It's Cooper.
Thanks very much. Well, Cooper, you want a proof? We've got it. Evidence that ties you in with the syndicate. Clerk.
Well, now, this is ridiculous,
Dollar.
Is it?
Let me tell you the facts about this thing.
Is something the matter, Mr. Dollar?
Get Sheriff Tompkins on the phone, clerk. Tell him I've got Art Wesley's killer here.
You mean Mr. Cooper?
Oh, now, wait a minute. Now, look, Dollar. If you'd get your facts straight, you'd drop this silly notion of yours.
What kind of facts, Cooper?
What time was Wesley killed?
Between 10:30 and 11 last night.
But, Mr. Dollar, Mr. Wesley's place is some 6 miles from here.
That's right. Why?
Well, then Mr. Cooper couldn't have killed him.
What do you mean?
Last night, I took a drink to Mr. Cooper's cottage here at the inn.
What time?
Around 20 to 11, and I chatted with him for at least 15 minutes.
Are you sure about that?
Oh, quite sure.
Well, Mr. Dollar, I'll buy you a drink sometime.
Cooper strolled back to the bar with a satisfied smirk on his face. So the one man who had to be Art's killer couldn't have killed him. I collared the clerk again and had him repeat his story in detail.
If you recall, it rained heavily last night, Mr. Dollar.
Yes, yes, I drove through it on my way up here.
Well, I was making the rounds of the inn, checking windows, things like that, when the house phone rang. It was Mr. Cooper calling from his cottage. He wanted a drink.
You say that was at 20 to 11?
Yes, I always jot down the time when I am called away from the desk.
All right, go on, go on.
Well, when I got to Mr. Cooper's cottage, he was sitting in the living room in front of the fire with a book.
Yeah.
We chatted a while, and then when I returned here to the desk, I jotted down the time again. 10:55.
Well, that does it.
What do you mean?
Oh, it's a good 20-minute drive from here to Art Wesley's lodge. If he was killed between 10:30 and 11, and Cooper was here at that time, he couldn't have done it.
Well, I'm sorry, but facts are facts. And, oh, excuse me. Lake Watika Inn. Yes, just a moment. Sheriff Tompkins, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, thanks. Hi, Sheriff.
Thought you ought to know, son. Remember that man Buckley we were looking for?
Yeah, sure, the other guest at the inn.
Yeah, we picked him up. I've been questioning him for an hour.
Any luck?
No, sir. He's just a traveling salesman who stayed at the inn because he didn't want to drive in the rain.
You sure?
Buckley swears he doesn't even know Cooper. Just between you and me, Johnny, I think we got the wrong fella.
No place again. I decided to start all over. Got into my car and drove to Art Wesley's place. Nothing was changed. I remember the trip I'd made the night he was killed, how it rained heavily until about half an hour before I arrived. How I'd found him lying in the open doorway, a bullet hole in his head. Yeah, and the hole in the ceiling over the shelf of provisions, marking the path of the bullet. It was there, so were the provisions. Canned food, mustard, sugar, a package of crackers. There was some... Wait a minute. Sugar. The sugar bowl. I stared at it for a moment. I remembered a couple of things the room clerk at the inn had told me. And suddenly the whole deal slid neatly and quietly into place. I drove back to the inn fast. Cooper's cottage was empty, so I went inside to the bedroom and took a look around. Then I spotted one of the pictures on the wall, a little out of place. I looked behind it. Yeah, just what I expected. Outside, I found Cooper sitting on the terrace in front of the main building. I slid into a chair across from him.
Well, Mr. Dollar, what fantastic crime are you going to accuse me of today?
Cooper, I got a one-track mind. and it's still stuck on murder.
Oh, now look, Dollar. We've been over this before, and personally, I find it quite boring. So much so that it's interfering with my vacation here.
That's too bad.
Yes, it is. So I'm leaving this evening.
I don't think so, Cooper.
Oh, come now.
Art Wesley was trying to expose a figure in a gambling syndicate. You.
Well, that's a matter of conjecture.
You had to stop him for keeps.
Oh, now look, Dollar. The time of Art Wesley's death has been established as between 10:30 and 11 last night.
That's right, between 10:30 and 11 last night.
And I'm sure you remember the room clerk telling you he was with me in my cottage living room from 10:40 to 10:55.
I sure do.
So that I certainly couldn't have killed your friend Wesley 6 miles from here during that time.
Except that Art Wesley wasn't killed at his lodge.
What are you talking about?
You see, I remembered something else the clerk had told me. The night of the killing, it stopped raining a little after 11.
All right, what difference does that make?
All the difference in the world, believe me. Here's what really happened, Cooper. You killed Art Wesley in the bedroom of your cottage here at the inn.
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
You immediately called the room clerk over and chatted with him in your living room for about 15 minutes. He didn't know there was a corpse in the next room.
Oh, really?
After he left, you took Wesley's body the 6 miles to his place and planted it in the doorway.
Oh, now look, Dollar.
Your problem was to make it look like he'd been killed there. Then you remembered. The slug that had killed him hit the wall in your bedroom. That gave you an idea. You figured out the right angle at the lodge and fired a shot upwards from the outside the door. It went through the ceiling at the back.
All right, Dollar, I've had enough of your half-baked theories with no proof whatsoever to back them up.
Correction, Cooper. This time I've got proof. There was a shelf of food under the bullet hole and a bowl of sugar directly under it.
A bowl of... So what?
When sugar gets wet, it gets crusty and it stays that way. But the sugar in that bowl was dry. Now, if the killing was between 10:30 and 11, and it rained heavily until after 11, then some rain would have dropped through the bullet hole into the sugar.
I see.
But, Cooper, the sugar was dry. So the bullet hole was made after the time of the murder, when you planted Wesley's body there. Just a little detail, Cooper, but it nails you. That, and of course the fact I found the slug that really killed Wesley just a couple of minutes ago.
Oh.
Buried in the wall of your bedroom, behind a picture you'd moved slightly to cover it.
Well, Dollar, I may as well tell you that I saw you come out of my cottage a few minutes ago. I figured you knew. So ever since you sat down here, I've been holding a gun on you under the table.
You know, Cooper, I may as well tell you. Ever since I sat down here, I've been holding a gun on you, too.
Were you...
Let's have it.
Well, you... You didn't have any gun.
A big-time gambler bluffed right out of the game. Cooper, you're slipping. Item 10, 3750, transportation and incidentals back to Hartford. Expense account total $187.40. Remarks? Cooper's awaiting trial. About Art Wesley... Well, I guess that sugar bowl was a dead man's revenge. And come to think of it, that revenge was pretty sweet. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment. In days long since gone by, one had to go out in search of derring do. But in a fast-moving world, exciting things are happening right around the clock. Things you can be in on no matter what else you're doing, as long as your radio is nearby. With CBS Newsmen on the job, you can make CBS Radio your listening post for world events. Stay tuned now for 5 minutes of CBS News, to be followed over most of these same stations by the FBI in Peace and War. Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, colorful New Orleans, from nightlife in the Latin Quarter to the dismal, deadly swamps. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood. Written by Robert Reif, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in tonight's cast were Virginia Gregg, Russell Thorson, Barney Phillips, Stacey Harris, Larry Thor, Parley Bear, and Les Tremaine. Musical supervision is by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Dan Coverley speaking.
Queen's Minute Mysteries. This is Ellery Queen with the case I call the Teeny Tiny Murder. A well-known furniture designer named Mycroft was found shot to death in his study, his body lying across a low coffee table. I noticed Mycroft was not alone in the den. A handsome Angora cat lay curled quietly asleep in the corner. Funny thing, said a police officer. A witness said he saw the shadow of someone standing shortly after he heard Mycroft scream. The person appeared to be having his face licked by the cat as it perched on Mycroft's coffee table. That makes looking for the suspect a snap, I said. In a moment, I'll explain why. In the case of the Teeny Tiny Murder, the suspect's face was licked by the dead man's cat as it perched on a coffee table. The coffee table was low, if you recall, so the murderer must have been, and was, a midget. Listen again to Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries.
Well, it appears that George Burns is back in college, and with the help of Jack Benny and Gracie, we'll see how he does. From 1945, Gracie and Jack go to college.
It's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen. With yours truly, Bill Goodwin, and the music of Meredith Wilson and his orchestra. For deep down laughs and listening enjoyment, it's George and Gracie. And for deep down coffee drinking enjoyment, it's Maxwell House, with extra flavor in the blend because of choice Latin American coffee skillfully combined. Extra flavor in the cup because Radiant Roast develops the full flavor of every coffee bean. And the result is that today more people buy Maxwell House than any other brand of coffee in the world. Well, last week, George was left $5,000 in the will of his late Uncle Marvin. But the will, which was written 30 years ago, specified that the money had to be used for George's college education. Gracie talked him into enrolling at Beverly Hills Tech. And so we now find America's oldest and unhappiest college boy getting ready to leave for his morning classes.
Oh, gosh, honey, I feel like a darn fool going to college at my age. I dread that first class.
What is your first class?
American history. And I'm terrible. When I should have been studying history, I was in vaudeville.
Oh, I'll bet you're very good in history.
You do, huh? Yesterday, the professor asked, what great American stayed longest in the Capitol? I answered, Al Jolson.
Oh, darling, even I know better than that.
Certainly.
Was Eddie Cantor.
Not doing so well in math, either. The professor flunked me.
He what?
He flunked me.
Well, you should have flunked him right back.
Well, I'm going to give up college. I'm not learning anything.
Not learning anything? Why, you're getting much smarter than me. There you are studying things like civics. And I've never even seen a civic.
I'll bring one home sometime.
You should be proud to be going to college and learning things.
But, honey, my friends are laughing at me. Last night, the fellas called up and wanted me to go to a burlesque show with them. I had to say, I can't, guys. Haven't finished my homework.
All right. But when you do go to a burlesque show, you'll enjoy it more because you've studied anatomy.
That's an advantage?
Well, of course it is. To them, a leg is just a leg. But you can tell a tibia from a fibula.
Oh, sure. I can whistle and stamp my metatarsal. I tell you, honey, I'm too old to go to college. Yesterday, we were discussing the Battle of Gettysburg, and the professor called on me.
Well, what's wrong with that?
He wanted an eyewitness account.
Oh, he was only kidding. You look very young. Well, I'll bet you win that contest they're having to pick the most popular man at Beverly Hills Tech.
Oh, don't be silly. I don't stand a chance.
Come in.
Well, hi, Burgess.
Oh, Bill, I want to ask you something. Doesn't George look young?
Young? George?
Here we go. All right, Bill. Come on, slug me.
Oh, George, I think you're terrific. You've got everything. Huh?
Well, you know, I think you're great, George. You're so... And you have such... And then there's your... Well, not to mention that... Well, I could go on saying those wonderful things about you for hours.
Well, all right, say a few. Would you say that George is handsome?
Well, there's not a handsomer man in the state of California.
Oh, why, Bill, you're handsomer than I am.
Well, all right, then, one. You got me on a technicality.
Small tech.
Well, would you say that George looks young?
Well, in his 20s.
Well, Bill, I believe you love George.
You bet I do, Gracie. Kind and clever, that's handsome young George. You know, about this time of year, handsome young George says to himself, what does deserving old Bill want for Christmas this year?
I got a TL for you, deserving old Bill. Handsome young George isn't giving any Christmas presents this year.
What?
Something tells me handsome young George has just heard his last kind word from deserving old Bill.
No Christmas present? Why, you miserable little miser. You antiquated little scarecrow.
Why, Bill, a minute ago you said that George was handsome in his 20s.
Well, he may have been handsome in his 20s, but who remembers 50 years ago?
Goodbye, humorist.
See you later, Scrooge.
You see, Gracie, let's stop kidding ourselves. College is not for me.
Well, George, your Uncle Marvin left you $5,000 to be used for your college education. Now, if you don't use it, what'll become of it?
I asked the lawyer that. He said it would go to a home for down-and-out actors.
Well, I'd much rather you got it now.
But, honey...
Think of the fine traditions of college. Think of the dignity and the stature it gives you just to be attending. Come in.
Is Georgie ready to go to school?
Oh. Be with you in a minute, Bobby.
I got a lot of books for you to carry today, Georgie.
Okay.
George, you have to carry that boy's books?
Certainly. He's a senior. I'm only a freshman.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey, Georgie, why didn't you tell me you had a swell-looking sister?
Yeah, I'll hope
so. And me hunting a doll for the senior prom. Well, this is just a hag for me to drag.
Look, Bobby,
why, she'll be the queen of the prom.
Yeah, me among all those college girls?
Are you kidding? Well, you're a slick chick. There ain't another tomato like you on the vine.
Well, all right.
Well, all right.
We'll cut a rug. We'll really squirm, worm.
Well, beat me to the socks, Bobby.
Beat me to the socks, Bobby. This chick is dynamite.
Well, all right.
Well, all right.
Okay, let's go to school.
So, Meredith, we've just got to keep George in college. I know you'll help because you're an intellectual like me.
Well, I've noticed that too, Gracie.
Yeah, it's up to us to guide George's footsteps so that he'll be brilliant and witty like us.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to discuss books and operas and things.
Yeah. Have you read any good books lately?
No.
Neither have I.
You've been to the opera recently?
No.
Me either.
Gee, what a shame that George can't discuss these things like we can.
Well... He will be able to if we can keep him from quitting college.
What does he want to quit for?
Well, he thinks he's too old. Now, if we could just get someone his own age to go to college with him now. Maybe someone on the radio.
They have some awfully old women on the Tom Brenneman program.
No, George isn't that old. And besides, we need a man. Someone George can pal around with.
It'll be awfully hard to find him in radio because the stars of the big programs have already gone to college. Look at the Rudy Valley program and the Jack Benny program.
The star of the Jack Benny program is a college man?
Sure. Rochester went to college.
A wonderful idea.
I have?
Jack Benny is the perfect man to go to college with George. They're old friends, and they both need an education. I'll go right over and see them.
Well, you'll never talk Jack Benny into going to college.
Oh, I don't know. There's always flattery.
Well, that's true. Any man with blood in his veins is susceptible to flattery.
Well, I'll try it on Jack anyway. See you later, Meredith.
Yes? Well, Gracie, hello.
Oh, excuse me, I have the wrong house, Van.
Van?
Oh, aren't you Van Johnson?
No, Gracie, it's me, Jack Benny. Gracie, how could you possibly get me mixed up with Van Johnson? We're miles apart.
You are?
Certainly. He's at Metro and I'm at Warner Brothers. You thought I was Van Johnson. Well, come in and sit down, Gracie. Here, I'll turn on the light. Mustn't strain eyes as good as yours.
Jack, I've come to ask you a favor.
Anything at all. Van Johnson, that's cute. What is it you want me to do, Gracie?
Well, I want you to make George into a college boy.
Gracie, you misunderstood me. I'm with Warner Brothers, not Mayo Brothers. Aren't that many vitamin pills.
Oh, no, Jack, nothing like that. You see, George is already going to college, and I want you to go with him.
Me? Go to college?
Well, college is oodles of fun, Jack. Football games, basketball, track meet.
No, forget it, Grace.
Studying things like psychology, chemistry, languages.
No, I'm not interested.
Meeting grand fellows, making dates with pretty co-eds. Reading good books.
What was that?
Reading good books.
No, the one before that.
Making dates with pretty co-eds?
Yeah, that one seems rather interesting. I wonder if they'd mistake me for Van Johnson. They might if I got a crew haircut.
Oh, yes, you'd look wonderful in a crew haircut. And so distinguished. I'll bet you'd have the only gray one at school.
Well, I don't know about this college thing, Gracie. Of course, if I do, it'll just be to help you and George, you understand. Are the co-eds really pretty?
Oh, beautiful. And all Jack Benny fans.
I mean, after all, you and George are my friends, but there's just one thing. Oh, not that it's important. I mean, not that I care, you know, one way or the other, but, doesn't it cost a lot of money?
Oh, no, it won't cost you a cent. George will pay your tuition and buy your books and everything.
Oh, Gracie, I couldn't let George do that.
You couldn't?
Well, if you put it that way, I guess I'm trapped. George would pay for everything, you say?
Oh, yes. You'll even get 50 cents a day for lunch.
50 cents?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can eat for 30, and that gives me 20 cents a day clear. Unless I eat with a co-ed. In that case, I save the whole 50 cents. All right, Gracie, it's a deal.
Good. Lunch for your first week will be $3. Here's a $5 bill.
Oh, wait, I've got your change right here in my pocket. Here you are. Four halves. Or if you'd rather have it in bills, I'll get out my billfold.
Oh, no, don't bother getting undressed. Now, get ready and I'll take you right over to the Beverly Hills Tech and enroll you.
Okay. Yeah, I wonder if those co-eds will mistake me for Van Johnson. Maybe I better have Rochester give me just a little henna rinse. Oh, Rochester!
Say, Meredith, when I heard you rehearse that new Western song you're playing, I couldn't help thinking how music just naturally conjures up definite pictures.
That's certainly true, Bill, and I bet we all have about the same picture impressions, too. Now, listen just a minute.
I shall.
well, Bill? Doesn't that tune bring to mind purple sage against colored canyons? And wagon trains rolling across the old Oregon Trail?
Oh, you bet it does, Meredith. The real melody picture with the instruments of the orchestra for colors. The deep tones of the woodwinds for mellowness. The flashing harp and the rhythm instruments for richness. The warm, vibrant color of the strings for vigor. And the depth of the brasses for full body. And your musical picture reminds me of something else, Meredith. About how, as the wagon wheels rolled westward, our forefathers laid the foundation for certain American traditions. Among them, our national custom of offering warming good cheer and friendship in a cup of coffee. Today, in homes where fine coffee is appreciated, the choice is most often Maxwell House. Just as your melody picture is a superb blend of orchestral colors, full-flavored, rich Maxwell House is a fine blend of Latin American coffees. Manizales for mellowness. Medellins for richness. Other choice Latin American coffees for vigor. And Bucaramangas for full body. And those fine coffees are so skillfully combined that the result is true harmony. Yes, true harmony in a cup of coffee. And that's why coffee lovers the world over agree that Maxwell House is good to the last drop.
George, I'm so proud of you. You've really showed an interest in college these past few days, ever since Jack Benny started.
You know, I can't get over that tightwad starting to college. I'd like to know what poor sapper's putting up the money. I'd laugh right in his face.
Well, that'd be pretty hard for you to do.
Yeah.
Huh? I meant Jack wouldn't tell you. But I'm so happy about the progress you're making in your studies. You know, I just adored it last night when you spoke to the waiter in French.
Yeah.
Without batting an eye, you said to him, "Bring me an order of la ham and la egg."
Well, I've been studying my French pretty hard. I'm not going to let Jack Benny get ahead of me. By the way, I got a surprise for you.
Oh, what?
I entered the contest for the most popular man at Beverly Hills Tech.
Oh, wonderful. I know you're going...
Come in.
Hello, Gracie.
Oh, good morning, Jack. George will be ready to leave for school in just a minute.
Good. By the way, George, I saw the results of the chemistry quiz. Passing was 75. You got 29.
Holy smoke, 29.
That's right. You know, if you'd like me to coach you a little after school, I'd be glad to. I mean, there's no reason why your grades can't be up with mine.
What did you get, Jack?
31.
Well, anyway, I'll bet George is better than you are in French.
Better in French? Why, I know a whole sentence. Ouvrez la fenêtre.
What does it mean?
Open the window.
Well, suppose George doesn't know that. Does it matter?
Does it matter? Put him in France on a hot day and he'll suffocate.
You won't feel so smart, Jack Benny, when my husband is chosen most popular man at Beverly Hills Tech.
Gracie, are you by any chance referring to that contest at school, which I have already as good as won?
Oh, are you running, too?
Running? I could skip and beat George. In just an hour, I have an appointment with Betty Calhoun, the co-ed president. She's a little southern girl, and I think I know how to sew up the co-ed bow.
Oh, a Southern girl, huh?
Yeah. Come on, George. Let's go to school.
Yeah. Run along, George. And don't worry about the co-ed vote. Pardon me, are you Betty Calhoun?
That's right. Was there something I could do for y'all?
Well, yes. I want you to get all the co-eds to vote for George Burns at the student rally tonight.
George Burns? That funny little old man?
Oh, please, Betty. I wish you wouldn't talk that way about my son.
Your son? How could you have a son his age?
Oh, I didn't. When I had him, he was just a baby.
But he looks so old.
Oh, he isn't really. He just looks that way because he had such an unhappy childhood down south.
You don't mean to say that Mr. Burns is a shown-up Southerner, too?
Too? Well, don't tell me you're from the South.
Couldn't y'all tell?
How could I?
Well, tell me about George's childhood.
Oh, it was awful. We were so poor, little Georgie didn't even have pants to wear.
Not even jeans?
Well, hers wouldn't fit him at all. It was terrible. We tried to make a living, but everything went wrong. When the cotton market was high, we planted cotton. Up came wool.
But you get wool from sheep.
Oh, well, up came sheep and ate the cotton.
Oh, my goodness.
And then we planted tobacco. Some auctioneers came to buy it, but before we could figure out what they were saying, the tobacco was dead. Miss Calhoun, now that you know George Burns was a poor, unhappy Southern boy, won't you get the co-eds to vote for him?
Well, I haven't talked to Mr. Benny yet.
Mr. Benny? You mean you'd even speak to that Yankee?
Are you sure he's a Yankee?
The worst kind, a Northern Yankee. From Waukegan. His full name is Jack General Sherman Benny.
Do you mean he was named after General Sherman?
Yeah, and not very long after.
In that case, I'll downright snub him.
Well, get ready. Here he comes.
Well, shut my mouth. If it isn't lovely and charming Betty Calhoun. Why, ma'am, you all sure enough look as pretty as a magnolia blossom from my old sure enough plantation.
Oh, no.
And greetings to you all, Mrs. Burns, ma'am.
Hello, Amos.
Benny sounds like a Southerner, but Benny isn't a Southern name.
You all ain't heard my full name, ma'am. It's Lee Stonewall Magnolia Fort Worth Taters Benny.
Really?
L-S-M-F-T.
But aren't you from Waukegan?
I'm proud to say I am. Waukegan, Virginia. Garden spot of the South. Folks down there will be mighty unhappy if you all don't get me elected the most popular man at Beverly Hills Tech.
Oh, shame on you, Mrs. Burns, for calling this fine Southern gentleman a Yankee. Come along, Stonewall.
Who? Oh, sure enough. Goodbye, Mrs. Burns, you all.
Oh, that unscrupulous man, cheating to win the election. Oh, thank goodness George had never stooped to deceit or trickery. Well, that leaves it to me, and I enjoy it so much. Hurry up and get dressed, dear. We'll be late for the student rally.
Oh, what's the use of going at all? Benny has got the co-ed vote sewed up.
Oh.
He'll swamp me.
He'll do nothing of the sort. Don't forget, every contestant will be called on to entertain tonight. And you're going to sing.
You think they'll like my singing?
Like it? Oh, darling, every time you sing, a chill runs up and down my spine.
Really?
Yeah, come on, sweetheart. Touch a spark of melody to the powder keg of your tonsils and blast me to paradise.
Okay.
Ain't misbehaving.
Oh!
A chill did run up your spine.
Oh!
What was that?
The return trip.
Oh.
But Benny is going to play his violin, and they might go for that.
Oh, don't be silly. What is violin playing anyhow? A horse's tail dragged across part of a cat. Believe me, when you sing, you sound better than any horse's tail or any part of a cat.
It's the sweetest thing you've ever said to me.
Besides, I wouldn't worry about Jack Benny. Bill Goodwin's got to introduce him, and I've had a little talk with Bill.
You wouldn't louse him up, would you?
College hasn't done a thing for you, has it?
All right, students. The contest for most popular man at Beverly Hills Tech continues. And now, it's a real honor for me to introduce this next contestant, a truly great artist.
That's me, folks.
He's a famous star of stage, screen, and radio.
I can't wait for television.
Not only a great wit, but a violin virtuoso.
That means I play well.
And here he is in person, John Bunny.
That's Benny, Jack Benny. Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to play for you Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. I would like to, but I can't. Instead, I will play a famous old gypsy melody.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to say that Mr. Barney plays a...
Benny, that's Benny.
Oh, I forgot to say that he plays a Stradivarius.
Thank you. Thank
now,
you.
That's the finest violin made, you know. Go ahead, Mr. Boney.
Benny.
In fact, a Stradivarius is to violins what Maxwell House is to coffee.
Look, the students here would like
well,
if I played...
Well, of course they'd like it. More people buy and enjoy Maxwell House than any other brand of coffee in the world. Well, go ahead and play, Mr. Beanie.
Beanie.
Oh, and speaking of beans, only superior coffee beans are blended and radiant roasted from Maxwell House. That's why Maxwell House is so appetizing, rich, full-bodied, and mellow. Coffee at its full-flavored best, good to the last drop. And now, back to Mr. Benny.
That's Beanie. No, Benny. Can I play now?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Bunny. Thank you very much. Students, you have just heard John Bunny and his magic violin.
Wait a minute.
You've had your chance.
But I...
Step aside, Mr. O'Flaherty.
That's one I didn't expect.
And now, our next contestant for most popular man at Beverly Hills Tech is the campus heartthrob, that handsome singer of songs, Sugar Throat Burns.
Say, George, I know I'm licked, and just to show you I'm a good sport, there's no hard feelings, I'll accompany your song.
Well, gee, that's swell of you, Jack. I'm going to sing Ain't Misbehavin'.
Ain't Misbehavin'. All right, here's your introduction.
Jack. Jay. That's the wrong tune. Look, I'll start singing, then you follow me.
Ain't misbehaving all by myself. Ain't misbehaving, I'm happy on the shelf.
Look, Jack, follow me.
No one to talk to, save a normal love for. Oh, baby, love for you. Really save a love for you. Ain't misbehaving, I'm on the shelf by myself. Oh, no, I ain't misbehaving. It's love and glue. Daddy, go away.
Well, George, George, I told you Jack Benny wouldn't win.
You were right.
Oh, darling, I'm so proud to be going to the prom with the most popular man at Beverly Hills Tech.
It's an honor, all right.
We'll dance our feet off.
Yeah.
Well, come on, Bobby. They're waiting for us at the prom.
We'll all read.
Well, all right.
Well, send me solid.
Latch on, Gage. We're swinging tonight.
Ta-ta, kid.
Goody, goody, jello pudding tonight. It tastes like grandma's, only more so.
You ain't kidding, that's right.
And just the jello, six delicious locked in flavors can't be beaten. So the proof of jello pudding's in the eating.
The jello twins are hard to find, but keep on looking in your store. When sugar shortages are over, there'll be more.
Just the taste of jello pudding, or a jello, and you know, it's the one and only J-E-L-L-O.
When we'll all be back. George Burns, Gracie Allen, Meredith Wilson, the orchestra, yours truly, Bill Goodwin. Good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, America's number one brand of coffee.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.